Hi, everybody. Welcome to my annual catch-up, my dear friend, Tony Robbins. Tony.
Great to see you, brother.
Thank you, pal. Thank you.
It's been just a few months since we spent time together working on our book and on our projects, but a year since we got together to talk about what we're excited about, what we're working on together, yeah. And excited to give the community sort of an update on the incredible world we're living in and the ability to change the world that we now have.
Yeah, it's exciting. Every time we get together, it's exciting. I hope it is for all of you listening in. And, you know, what we try to talk about each year, what are the things that really move the needle? What are the things that move the needle in our lives? And what are things that move the needle for people all around the world? And we both have been involved in a lot of projects this last year that are very, very exciting. So where do you want to start?
Well, I mean, I do want to begin with the notion that that both you and I are driven by purpose.
Yes.
And that what we call a massively transformative purpose, sort of the canvas that we're painting on and the moonshots, the specific targets, the companies, the goals that we're working on. And everything out there that you want to change the world with is difficult and it takes time and energy. Sometimes we just celebrated the 25th anniversary of the XPRIZE, by the
way. Wow, yeah, congratulations.
It was amazing.
That's awesome.
We just had visioneering. It was awesome. We'll talk about some of the XPRIZEs you and I have worked on and are working on. But I joked and I said, you know, it's, yeah, an overnight success after 25 years of hard work. But it's that passion and purpose that keeps you going, because the XPRIZE died 1,000 deaths along the way.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I always say people overestimate what they're going to do in a year and they underestimate what they're going to do in a decade, yeah. Or two or three, or in our cases, two, three, or four decades. And for myself, this is my 42nd year doing this, which blows my mind. But what I can tell you is passion is, when people keep saying, well, I want to do what I'm passionate about, passion is what is the core of my being. Yeah. But passion opens the door. Passion wakes you up. Passion gets you excited about something you're going to make happen. But I think, well, along with passion, there has to be an insatiable hunger. That's what you have. Yeah. That's what I have. That's what, you know, many of our dearest friends who are the most successful, Mark Benioff around the corner here, has. It's that insatiable hunger that'll keep you going when things aren't going well. Because a lot of people are passionate for their project, because anything is passionate when it's brand new, when it's exciting. A relationship's always passionate in the beginning. A business you're passionate for in the beginning. But then you see so many people, they're starting two and three businesses and they haven't made the first one successful. It's like a person who's not successful the first child, let me have three more, you know? But so I really want you to really think about, if we can, is to think about, find your passion, but what's going to sustain your hunger when you're not being rewarded? Because in business or any project you're doing, the beginning is exciting. And then there's the stages where there's all the tough parts that show up that are going to challenge you. And you need something that's going to pull you through that time and push you through that time. I think the passion pulls us. Mm-hmm. But the hunger, when there is no passion, when you're burnt out, when you have no sleep, when it doesn't seem like any rewards are coming, the hunger to serve something larger than yourself. You know, Martin Luther King's thing about saying, you know, a man who hasn't found something, or a person who's not found something they're willing to die for, isn't fit to live. Those are pretty strong words, but I think they're accurate. You don't feel alive even if you stay alive if you don't find that. So finding your passion's great. But what can you find to serve that you're so pulled for, so pushed to do, that if you're not rewarded at all for 5 years, you'd keep on going? You know, that's the real test.
Your purpose in life, what makes you, you know, proud to be alive, what drives you.
Yes.
So it's the challenge is that a lot of individuals, myself included, retrospectively, see these success stories, and we just assume that they started zero and they ended up here without any challenges.
In a straight line.
A straight line, right? And so it's like, you know, a dear friend of ours, Joe Gebbia, who's one of the founders of Airbnb. And I'm so excited to be, we're going to bring him to Abundance 360 this January to tell the story. And Airbnb, amazing success, right?
Yes.
Extraordinary on a global scale.
But when you know the whole story.
Oh my God, just, you know.
After what, 4 years, they still didn't have anything going,
crazy,
right? They're barely hanging
crazy
on.
And even SpaceX and Tesla, and incredible stories of just barely surviving.
And Elon putting everything on the line there,
and
right?
And then some, going into debt back
massively.
In 2008.
Lost it all.
At the same time, a divorce. And so at XPRIZE Visioneering this year, I had a panel of four amazing venture capitalists talking about funding moonshots and starshots. So Yuri Milner, one of the earliest investors in Facebook, who's working on the first interstellar probe of a spacecraft to go to Alpha Centauri.
Wow.
Morris Kahn, who funded the Israeli lunar XPRIZE team.
Yes.
And then you know, a number, John Doerr, who's the head of from Kleiner Perkins. And one of the things that that Yuri Milner said, I think that was really telling, was that if you're going to go play that big, be prepared to pay the cost.
Yeah.
Be prepared to pay the cost.
Right.
It isn't easy. It may be a cost of your health, a marriage, whatever. And so it's really, you know, this conversation about how big do you go And what is going to fuel you to push through those hard times?
It's finding that sustainable purpose. It's, I always say, passion is the genesis of genius. The genius comes from it, but part of that genius is sweat. Part of that genius is, you know, we're both sitting here
desperation.
Are you willing to do something 4 decades from now? Do you have that kind of passion for it? Do you have that kind of insatiable hunger? Because if you don't, you're probably better off doing something else, or you're better off working for somebody else and having free time to go enjoy. Because I think most people just, they don't understand the level of effort that's required to produce something of the caliber you're talking about. But the people that succeed, the effort is the reward.
Yeah.
Like, who you become in the process of breaking through all those challenges is more valuable than the challenge itself. I always tell people, like, what if you just achieved the greatest goal of your life? Think of some great goal you achieved. Sometimes after you achieve it, your brain goes, is this all there is? Or other times you might have been like out of your mind, but for how long did you stay happy, excited about that? For 5 years?
A microsecond.
For a year? For 6 months? For 6 weeks? For 6 hours? Somewhere between 6 hours and 6 months max, usually 6 hours and 6 weeks, they might be happy, and then the brain adjusts. And so the purpose of all this is not to get what you want. The purpose of this is to grow and to give. It's the, you know, who you become. Yeah. That's what's going to make you happy.
It's the game you play, the journey you're on.
It's corny to say it, but it's true.
It is. I remember when the Ansari X Prize got won, Spaceship One had just flown the second time into space. Yeah. It was October 4th, 2004. And I had this visceral feeling that I had just climbed a mountain and gotten to the peak.
Yeah.
And then when I looked around me, all I saw were higher mountain peaks. And I was like, okay.
But that's how we're supposed to be. If you're working on a goal right now and you're about to achieve it, I'll give you one piece of advice. You better figure the next thing you're going to go for. Because otherwise, there's this drop that happens, no matter how great the victory is, because it isn't about that. It's about growth. If you don't grow, you die. And growth gives us the ability to contribute something beyond ourselves. And that's what makes life meaningful. I mean, if you've ever had an experience that you love, something that was touching, moving, emotional, what's the first thing you want to do? Share with somebody you care about, because it gets magnified. So we're made to grow and give. And if we aren't doing those two things, it doesn't matter how much money you have, it doesn't matter how many people think you're great, or how many PhDs you get, or how many, you know, Grammys or whatever it is. I deal with all those people. And many of them are miserable after they hit that highest mountain, because life is continuous growth.
Yeah, and it's contribution and sharing with people that you love,
exactly.
Right? And when you're going into these massively, you know, intense companies and startups and trying to change the world in any way, shape, or form, you know, you're going to spend a lot of your time working on that. And the people you work with, the community that you're with, better be people that you love and you enjoy. You're going to probably spend more time with them than you do your family.
That's true. I mean, think about it. Most people spend 50 to 80 hours a week minimum in their business. And how much time do they spend with their own children? And that becomes a stress. So for me, what I've tried to do is like us.
Yeah.
My dearest friends, my family, my sons, they're all involved in businesses I have, because then you're around each other all the time. Over the last 4 or 5 years, we built the business from zero to $4.2 billion, Josh and I.
Yeah.
And like, we were talking about the other day, we just sold this company, and he's made a fortune, he's only 41 years old, and I said, you know, what, are you gonna retire now? What are we gonna do? So we picked out the next project that we're gonna go do, because we get to be around each other and create together and do these things together. So our invitation to you is don't underestimate what it's gonna take, and don't also underestimate there'll be a point when you hit a critical mass, just like in finance or anything else, where now we can do more with our pinky than, you know, when it used to take us 24/7 around the clock. Maybe talk about the next billion, because that's an example of how we did something pretty rapidly.
Absolutely.
That would have taken forever before.
So let's talk about this project that we're working on that you're going to hear about just next month. Official announcement of this. So Tony, your moonshots, your MTPs are all around, not one of them, all around feeding the next billion people.
Yeah, I'm really proud this year. I fed 42 million people in my lifetime, started with 2 families and 4 and 8 and got to 2 million people a year. My foundation, I matched it, 4 million. But when I was writing Money Master the Game, I'm interviewing all the wealthiest people in the world, all who started from scratch, nobody from the Lucky Sperm Club. So, but what is interesting is while I'm interviewing these people worth tens of billions of dollars, I watched, you know, Congress get rid of the SNAP program, or at least reduce it by $6 billion. It used to be food stamps, they used to call it. I survived on that, my family did, so it's not just an interesting thought. That means 1 week out of every month, they have to give up a week's worth of food unless people like us step in. So I called my team and said, how many people have I fed in my lifetime? They added up, it's 42 million, I was proud of that. But it's like, what if I fed 50 million in a year? What if I fed 100 million? What if I fed a billion meals in the next 10 years? And so we're exactly at the 5-year mark in December, and we're gonna announce next month, we just hit 500 million meals.
Amazing.
Which will really help that. But I wanna do more. I wanna do 1 billion people sustainably. and I want to do it worldwide. And so that's when we got together and said, let's do an XPRIZE. And the team did a lot of research. Yeah.
So here's the situation. Right now, as the world is getting wealthier, as we're heading towards abundance, right, we're uplifting the bottom billion, providing them access to energy, water. When they want food, it's not just leafy greens. They want higher quality protein. Yeah. The challenge is that to feed, you know, an additional billion people with tuna, with beef, with chicken, with pork, the planet's not going to sustain that. Right, we already have 1/3 of the non-ice landmass of planet Earth dedicated to livestock, and over half of the food we grow as grains goes to feeding that livestock, and we can't double that again.
And we're limiting a soccer field full of rainforest every hour, and all this is really going to feed these animals or to grow these animals. And most of you, I'm sure, know that, you know, a steer from the time it's born till the time it's butchered, unfortunately, takes up an aircraft carrier worth of water, and water is one of the biggest resources on Earth. We have from the flatulence in these animals more destruction of the ozone than all airplanes and cars combined. I'm sure you've heard that with the Green Deal, but the idea that no one's gonna eat beef, when we were talking, I said, it's not gonna happen, especially in China, where you have a upper middle class that's bigger than the United States at this point, and they're all eating it. And if you look at the statistics, in the next 30 years, we need to produce 70% more food. The planet can't sustain it. So what's the solution? And so we've sat down and we've brainstormed about it, the brilliant minds that we possibly could, to come up with a solution, and we finally did. And part of that solution is we certainly want a protein source that can feed the next billion, that's cheap enough to do that. And there are many companies now, as I'm sure you know, that are creating these meat substitutes, Impossible Burgers, et cetera. That's fantastic, but the price still isn't low, so we wanted to create something competitive like that. And I'm not personally a big meat eater, but I know that people are gonna still eat it. So I said, how do we make an impact? And we came up with this stem cell beef. We're in the stem cell business ourselves. And you know, they've been doing this for years. Kobe beef can be duplicated where you use 98% less water, where you use, you know, 95% less land, where you don't pollute the environment, you don't have the filthy animal, you don't butcher anything, and the flavor is there as well. So I got very excited about this. I put up the first million, and then I said, I think I have the right partner, which I'll announce next month, that'll put up 19. I want to do a $20 million prize, $10 million for a vegetable source and $10 million for one that's beef-driven, but it's non-butchered. It's clean beef,
so no dead animals. Imagine this. You take a stem cell from the muscle of a Kobe beef, and then you grow the steak. And so literally, in downtown Nairobi or Mumbai or New York, wherever it might be, it turns out that half of the cost of a meal is the transportation miles.
That's right.
But what if it's grown right then and there? And in fact, what if
the speed also.
The speed, and what if it actually tastes better?
That's exactly
is
right.
Is healthier for you and is cheaper. That's the goal of this XPRIZE of feeding the next billion. You'll hear more about it next month, so stay tuned. Yeah. But at the end of the day, this is, you know, how do we not just work harder? How do we reinvent what we're doing?
Yes.
That's the world we're living in today.
Yes. And I think it's thinking outside that box. And stem cell beef has been created years ago, but it was, $35,000 a pound.
Burger.
It's not going to work real well. And then it got it down to, you know, $30 and $13. So what we believe in, what we're going to happen from all these teams competing, just like you did with space, I mean, how much was competed on for the XPRIZE for space, and how big is the industry now?
So it was a $10 million prize. $100 million was spent by the teams, you know, 10X.
To win 10.
And then, I mean, there's tens of billions of dollars in the industry right now.
10 billion plus industry
At least, yeah.
And our goal is to do the same thing and also make that food, as you just said, available locally. And think about it. No pollution of the ozone, no destruction of the water, not eating up any more rainforest, and it has to taste better. So you're not getting people to do it because they're being conscious. You're getting them to do it because
it's in their best interest.
It's in their best interest. Tastes as good as anything else. It wins, you know, the Michelin prize of taste compared to anything else.
So let's talk about another area that we're working on together that we're both very excited about, and you know, if you've ever seen us before, talking about it's longevity. And we are so excited working on a book together.
Yes, it's called Life Force, and it's really about taking the best that exists right now in medicine, the newest components in medicine, regenerative medicine, and bringing them to people, everything from stem cells, exosomes, on down. What part can we share?
Well, I mean, first of all,
I want to share, but
I know.
It's
fine, but it's not just longevity, I should correct. It's really about vitality.
That's why I say Life Force.
Yeah, so Life Force is the name of the book.
But I know you want to be 120 plus, right? That's the minimum. You know what's interesting? Well, you see us talk about this, it's because I'm always the energy guy and he's all the longevity guy, and we need both. But when you ask most people, we were at the
Vatican,
and I was the cleanup speaker there, and you were speaker there, and one of the questions that Peter asked this group of really advanced doctors, regenerative doctors, they're doing things that seem miraculous by traditional medicine and producing extraordinary results in cancer and other areas. And Peter said, how many of you want to live to be 120? And what percent raised their hand?
I was blown away. A third raised their hands and two thirds didn't. I was like,
I was trying to tell them, because it's what most people think of aging. They think of being decrepit, not having quality of life. So that's why I'm talking about, instead of just lifespan, it's health span. Yeah. It's like if you could be 50, 60, or 70, but feel 30 or 40, have the looks, and that's really where medicine, believe it or not, some of the newest medicine is taking us, and it's not 30 years in the future. Some of the things that we're going to talk to you about in this book, and you'll hear about as we start to chat with them and the interviews we're doing, is you're going to see some things that you would think would happen in 30 years that are happening in the next 2 and 3 years that are right now in phase 2 and phase 3 trials with the FDA. Phase 1 is safety, if you're not familiar with it. 2 is efficacy, and 3 is efficacy at scale. So some of these things that are life-changing around cancer on the body, that are completely different than anything else that's out there and that are being proven to work, they're coming now.
Yeah, it's really, this book is about giving people hope of what is coming down the pike. I like to think of it as data-driven optimism.
Yes.
Right, so we're gonna be looking at probably the cutting-edge technologies, to throw a few of them out for conversation. Stem cells for sure.
Yes.
A lot going on there.
I'll give you an example. Like, I got involved with them initially because I had a severe snowboarding accident. I did some stupid things. Tore my rotator severely, went to 3 different doctors, and the best I could hear is 6 months recovery, and I said, I can't do that in my life. I had stem cell treatments, 2 of them, and my shoulder is absolutely perfect. The doctors cannot believe it. They told me there's no way this could happen. You have to do the surgery. So to say that we're passionate about this subject, we both have had the experience of it directly, is amazing, but we want to bring you the cutting edge, and that's what this book will do.
Where is it? What's possible with it? Where is it going to go?
What can't it do too? So it's not, so you don't get pulled into something that's BS.
Of course, there's other technologies, Wnt pathways, cell-to-cell communications, senolytic medicines. Turns out that an average cell in your body can only replicate 50 times, and then it should die. If it doesn't die, it either becomes a senile cell, which generates these inflammatory factors, which makes your body a wreck.
It's like a ghost cell.
Or it becomes a cancer. And so you don't want either of those, but you can knock it out with senolytic medicines. Anyway, a whole slew of different things. The mission here is for you to realize that from a perspective of your career, your family, you can add another 10, 20, 30 healthy years this next decade. Right, and so how does that change your perspective of what you want to do with your life?
And to your longevity piece, so people understand, it's the idea of having longevity, but having it with a youthful energy and
aesthetics,
strength.
Aesthetics, yeah, because, cognition, mobility.
Yeah, nobody wants to lose their mind, and somebody's worried about this, but there are breakthroughs happening right now. And in cancers, without giving you the details, there's one in particular that most people, if they hear they got pancreatic cancer, it's pretty much, they send you home, it's over. 6 months, 9 months, whatever the case may be. There's one organization right now that's in phase 2 trials, 72% success rate with pancreatic cancer. These are things that are happening not 20 years from now, but right now. So we're excited to bring them to you and show you some of the breakthroughs, some of the little things you can do right away, and some of the bigger things if you need them for the health of yourself or your family.
Yeah.
Should be a book that not only changes your life, but perhaps saves your life or someone you love. That's the goal.
Another area we're both passionate about and that we worked on together is reinventing education.
Yes.
And thank you, along with Elon Musk and the DeVos family, Scott Hassan, one of the benefactors of our Global Learning XPRIZE.
Yep.
If you don't remember, what we challenged teams to do was build an Android app. Why Android? Because it's the prevalent software operating for tablets and phones around the world. We have, you know, iOS here in the United States and in, you know, Europe, but for most of the developing world, for the rising billion, it's Android. Yep. And we challenged them, can you build an Android software program that can take a child in the middle of no place from illiteracy to basic reading, writing, and numeracy in 15 months? Elon put up the $15 million prize along with Tony and others, and it worked. We got 700 teams develop software, 134 delivered final software. We narrowed down to 5 finalists, and we went into Tanzania. We went out to the outer villages where there was zero technology, zero electricity, and there was zero literacy. We did testing, and we gave 5,000 tablets out to 2,500 kids. And at the end of 15 months, here are the numbers. First of all, the total competition of $15 million prize drove $300 million in expenditures,
so
right?
So incredible.
It's like 20x leverage of changing
so
the world.
Proud of it.
And then the final, the winning software, 1 hour of tablet use per day was equivalent to that child being in full-time school.
Yeah.
And
what you understand is they're self-directed, because what spurred this on for me personally was the internet has unlimited resources today. You can get the greatest education, you read the finest books, you can learn from the greatest teachers, but It's worthless if you're illiterate. And 1 in 7 adults in the world is illiterate right now. And 250 million children can't read, write, or do basic arithmetic. And there are never going to be enough teachers to do it. So this became the avenue. And the best part is it's open source.
Why don't you share with me? Open source the winning solutions. There were two of them, actually. And what we're working on right now is we have philanthropists like Tony and others taking it from Swahili, which was the language he was teaching in Tanzania, into Hindu and Spanish and other languages. And the goal is that, you know, when, I mean, all of us have, how many old phones do you have in your drawer, right? And when you can donate that phone and have it become a teaching device to a child someplace. And by the way, these Android devices will eventually become free. I'm clear about that, sure. Right? Google will give it to you out and say, here it is, as long as I can collect the data. Amazon will say, hey, here's a free tablet, as long as you order stuff on Amazon. The price is demonetizing very rapidly. Yeah. At the same time, we're in this explosion of connectivity.
Yes.
Right? So we've got 5G coming up. Next year, SpaceX is launching, I think, like 20 plus launches of their Starlink. Yeah. You know, global.
What's the estimate now in the next 3 years? How many people are going to be added to the web?
So
what is it now, by the
way?
So the
number I know in 2017 was 3.8 billion.
Right.
And we are expected to reach 100% penetration in the next 6 years.
Wow.
Right. So we're talking getting to 8 billion people connected globally.
Think about what that does to any opportunity to educate, to learn, to grow. Any business you may have. And also think of what that means for competition, because that's one of the beautiful things that makes life better is people now are competing with people in Kenya with a phone, that's got more power in it than when I worked with President Clinton. He didn't have those tools. You couldn't look on a satellite and see the weather and know what's going and translate like that. You know what I mean? It's the world is changing so rapidly, and the demonetization is what's making it available for everyone, not to mention the satellite you're describing.
So when I'm teaching and mentoring to my digital community, I'm reminding them that, listen, we are in a point in time where 4 billion people are coming online. They're the longest massive increase in customer base ever.
Yeah.
They're all going to want insurance, healthcare, education, everything.
It's literally almost the doubling of the current size of the web of what people use.
And they're going to want it digitally, nearly for free, instantly. Right, exactly. And by the way, they're coming online, these 4 billion people, not like you and I did on AOL that 97 are abroad.
Yeah.
They're coming on in gigabit connection speeds.
Yeah.
I was just this earlier today talking to a dear friend, Jack Hittery at Alphabet and Google in Google X, now Alphabet X, about the state of quantum computing. And all of the quantum computing providers from IBM and Google and Rigetti are beginning to offer quantum computing services on the cloud, on the cloud for open source. And so, I mean, it's an extraordinary world. And another thing, capital is becoming more abundant than ever before, right?
Yes,
we're seeing all-time highs in venture capital, in crowdfunding. By 2025, we're going to have $300 billion of crowdfunding available, which means it doesn't matter where you're born, where you live, you have a good idea, the money's there to develop it.
It's wild. It's
so
truly
it's going to really accelerate the rate of acceleration. I mean, one of the things that I love that you're working on that I'm standing in line waiting for next.
I know you're going with this.
is digitizing ourselves.
Yes.
So why don't you talk about what you're doing with our friends at Rival Theory?
Well, one of the challenges I've had in the last few years, it's a beautiful challenge. My events have gotten bigger and bigger, and I thought it was exciting to do stadiums of 15,000 people, and I just did a 35,000-person event in Germany, and I just booked an 85,000-person event.
That's insane.
And the demands to do that are pretty huge, and I love it. But what I've learned is there aren't any more days, and you can't get much bigger than 80,000 or 100,000 people in a stadium. So how do I reach more people? And also, how do I do it at the level I really want to, the level of intimacy? I'm able to project where people feel like I'm talking to them in a giant audience. But what if I could really do it? And so you hear so much about AIs and how they're going to destroy the earth and so forth. And I know anything's possible. I'm not stupid. But I believe that what we need to lead with is a compassionate AI.
Mm.
So I met with a whole series of teams because I'm going to build my AI in my category, and I have a great advantage that most people don't have. You know, original AI is really just brute force machine learning.
Mm.
And so they're looking for patterns. And the great thing is I've recorded every intervention. I don't know if you've seen I'm Not Your Guru on Netflix or something, but I do these interventions where it looks like it's impossible. Someone's suicidal or whatever, and they're turned around.
I'm saying, how the hell is he going to do this one?
That's usually what
they
say.
Does.
But what's beautiful is I've done that since I've recorded them since I was like 24 years old, and most of them have been on film since I've been 28. So tens of thousands of hours of interventions. And so the machine learning has something to dig into, which would be really hard to do normally. And then, so we're already at the point where it's at Surrey level. It's, you know, it's it can read a book and you don't know it's not me. But it's not scripting. I'm talking about real AI. So it's been programmed to be able to, one, study all the patterns that I study in you, look for those in a matter of seconds. Two, it has a greater memory than I do because it has a limited memory. It remembers you personally. So the interaction, it'll go back and have all of your history, all of your experience. It knows all the styles of interventions that I can do. It knows how to vary the voice and the emotion. All this happening. So by March, we'll have our first version that I believe we're going to expose in Dubai and Abu Dhabi at the World Exposure there, World Event there. And that'll be our first version. And my whole thing is technology always takes twice as long and costs four times as much, and it's always worth it. But my partners at Rival Theory are so ahead of the curve, it's blown my mind. Now, anybody can do the visuals. I had so many people go, oh, I've got an AI, and then I go look at it, and it's really pretty, and it's a script. Right. This is not a script. This will be able to interact with you individually and respond uniquely exactly as I do. So first version, I'm sure, will be somewhat rudimentary, although it's way ahead of what I thought. But in 3, 4, 5 years, for sure, I should be learning from it. I can have millions of individual people I could be coaching one-on-one, 24/7, 365. I can already send it instead of me, and it can speak me speaking in another language with my voice, my gestures, my everything.
That's
amazing. It's not at the level yet where it can individually, you know, take apart what's going on in your brain and reassemble it like I do, but it's coming.
I want to slow this down a little bit. So what Tony's talking about is neural nets, right?
Yes, exactly.
We're talking about when you take a neural network and multi-level neural nets, and this is really what's revolutionized AI over the last 2 to 5 years. If you give this neural net training data over and over and over again, the neural net develops patterns that it learns from consistency of, in this situation, do this, in this situation, don't do this. And so all of your books, all your recorded videos, all your interactions are training up a Tony neural net. Now, that neural net's gonna drive...
It's better than that. I'm actually interacting with it already. It's asking me questions. I'm telling its things. It went through the early stage and everything was no. It was like a two-year-old. And I'm watching it grow. And you can also see its brain in the net because you can see what are principles, what are emotions, what are experiences. And you actually see this brain that's expanding, the net expanding. You see it visually.
That's amazing.
It's wild.
So what we're talking about here is a capability to simulate Tony's voice. And by the way, once you've got those patterns and so forth, you can do it in any language.
Yeah, that's easy.
That's easy. And then to create visual, and you've seen deep fakes, right? We've talked about deep fakes before.
Yeah.
And so, but this is a deep fake driven by an intelligent neural network that is a version of you.
And it's driven by my values. Its desire, its entire reason for being is to serve.
It's been programmed
from the very beginning. This is its core reason for being.
And so the vision of being able to go into an interview and say, hey, Tony, I need some advice when I go in, or I'm about to have a conversation with my wife or my kids, whatever the case.
And I got all your history that I know, all the interactions we've had before.
Yeah.
A better memory than I would have, by far.
So this is the ability to impact the world at scale.
Yes, and my goal with this, obviously, is not just me. It's to bring brilliant minds from around the world, the great values.
I'm coming in right after Tony on this. but eventually, it's for the ability to do it at scale for everybody.
Yes, exactly right.
I mean, it's a tremendous world, right, that we're heading towards. And our dear friend, Ray Kurzweil, talks about, you know, Ray 2 of 10, right?
Yeah,
so it's the notion of having AI personas. And this may sound scary for some. This may sound kind of way out there. First of all, it's real. It's happening right now. It's not science fiction. It's happening. The implications of these worlds we're heading towards are going to be very different. We're transforming how we interact, how we live our lives. And I want to point something out to everybody. This may be scary for people. And it's scary because you can't anticipate what's coming next. I think part of what's important for us, for all of us, is to learn, to constantly update our schema of where the world is going, so it's not fearful for you. You can start to say, oh, I can use it in this way. I can use it for good in these ways. I
mean, think about it. Electricity can light up a city or you can kill somebody with it. You're never going to be able to eliminate any advantage to not being abused. But if you look at the history of humanity, and again, no one knows what's the truth, but the history of humanity, good has outweighed evil throughout it because there's more good than there is evil. And whatever evil comes up with, good comes with it as well. So that may sound overly optimistic. I'm really not. I just believe in intelligence, and fear is not going to help you. And the technology is coming anyway. So the question is, how do you get ahead of it? And how do we find ways to use it? How do we find ways to protect humanity, enhance humanity? That to me is the focus of what we can do. We can't control everything, but you can certainly control what we can do. And if you get there first, you start to become the leader that other people start to get excited about. But the idea of having a community of the greatest thinkers around the world that you could go to and call upon for anything 24/7, 365, and have a personal relationship with them. I mean, it's like, talk about mentors. You know, there's so many people you and I have that we love each other. We know that, but we only have limited time. We mentor each other. Our dearest friends do that. But holy cow, to have everyone there at your fingertips or anyone in the world, that to me is about as exciting as anything we're doing so far.
It is extraordinary. And that is where we're going.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. For sure.
You know, one of the things that I care about deeply is helping people be excited about the future and not fearful of it.
Oh, tell me about your new book.
Sure. It's called The Future is Faster Than You Think. And it's coming out in January, and I've spent the last year and a half, really the focus is on how are these technologies going to transform every industry. So I take a look in this book at transportation, entertainment, healthcare, education, agriculture, finance, insurance, you know, real estate. And this is in part the content that for me, I'm teaching the entrepreneurs that I mentor in my community. Because if you understand where the world is going, if you understand the convergence, so one of the realizations is that it used to be sufficient that you were an expert in computation or 3D printing or AR or VR. That's no longer the case because these technologies are converging and new business models are coming out. So part of my mission in my community and in this book is helping people understand the opportunity space, understand what is possible, because all these things are empowering us. Yeah. It's demonetizing and democratizing. I mean, you think about the power that individuals have, it's extraordinary.
And it's available to anybody now. That's the most incredible thing.
To anyone.
It's getting to that point. I think that, in business and in life, I always tell people anticipation is the ultimate power. Leaders anticipate. Losers react. Mm. You know, if you play a video game against a child and you're under the age, or over the age of 40 anyway, you know you're gonna get your ass kicked, right? It's just a matter of time. And why is it? Because they're faster, because they're quicker, because they're smarter? No, it's because they played this game so many times. They know the first bad guy's here, the next bad guy's there. You go in there and go, I'm gonna beat him. You're reacting. They're anticipating. They destroy you. You're done in 14 seconds. They're on there for another 30 minutes, right? Making it happen. So the abundance community is really a play, and you're made it digital now, which is the best part, right? So anybody can participate, but I encourage like all my platinum partners, all my Lions, all the people that are my people that I personally coach to really participate in this community because you're bringing the best insights from the people that are the leaders in every form of technology that's out there, and they're looking at how to use it for good.
Yeah.
But if you're in business, you don't know it, you're gonna get pushed over. You look at so many businesses over the years, IBM, how everything was IBM, 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 and now all of a sudden IBM gets knocked off by some kid, named Bill Gates, right? Now he sneaks in and takes over the whole thing. Then, it's all Microsoft. Well, no, maybe not. A couple guys from Google come along, Apple. And so you can look around and remember when Barnes & Noble was destroying all the bookstores, and then all of a sudden, here we go with Amazon. Amazon's opening bookstores. If you don't anticipate what's coming, you're going to find yourself in trouble. It's why, 96% of all businesses are gone in 10 years. Half are gone in a year, but 96% are gone in 10 years because they don't understand what's coming. So the reason I'm doing the AI is because I want to make that difference in the world, but I also have to keep
reinvent
ahead.
Absolutely.
And be ready, deliver something before anybody else does. That's the advantage I think that the Abundance 360 community really offers. Tell them what you do with it digitally now, because that's anyone can do. They don't have to fly, across the world.
Yeah, and one of the things I've talked about is the fact that we have these 6Ds. Whatever you can digitize enters a period of slow, deceptive growth, but then it comes disruptive, right? So you're in the deceptive growth of your AI persona. It's slow, it's moving, and when it hits, it's going to explode.
Explodes.
Right? And then it is literally dematerializing, demonetizing, and democratizing. So we're going to dematerialize you. We're going to put you on every cell phone.
I'm all for that right now. I've been in 9 countries in 11 weeks. I'm ready
and
for it.
We're demonetizing you and then democratizing you. So I did the same thing. My Abundance 360 program I run every January. I spent all year getting ready for it. It's $15,000 to go. It's limited to 360 CEOs and entrepreneurs. And I want to impact many, many more. So we created a digital version of this. And so if you join Abundance 360 Digital, you get access to the entire 3 days digitally. But I do 4 live webinars a month with the community. We have an amazing app where I'm in there every day, every week, creating content, generating it. And here's the challenge that I think none of us realize. Our brains are wired for a different world. Our brains evolved on the savannas of Africa, hundreds
Slow
of thousands.
Evolution.
Everything was local and linear. Nothing changed generation to generation, millennium to millennium. But the world is changing exponentially. Things are changing not, decade to decade, not even year to year, they're changing month to month.
Yeah.
And the only way to truly understand the rate of change, because our brains aren't wired to anticipate it, is constantly updating yourself.
Let it out.
So myself and my team, we are constantly interviewing, pulling in, you know, anticipating and reporting on and helping make sense of where is quantum computing going, yeah. right? I mean, a crazy
idea.
And
what does that really mean to you? Yeah. And how can you take advantage of that opportunity?
It means that we're going to revolutionize pharma, the medicines that are available, materials. I mean, it's an exotic concept, but where's AI going? And people saying, AI, I don't know about it. AI is Google. AI is going to be your AI persona. And all of these things, if you're an entrepreneur, you need to be thinking about how do you leverage these technologies. And it used to be you had to build everything. Today, as an entrepreneur, you can take modules for customer service, modules for HR, modules for finance, and you can build a company. I mean, companies like Casper, right? The mattress company.
Yeah.
I mean, everything in their stack are modules they're getting from outside resources, and they're putting a brand and a customer sort of vision on the top of it, and they're built a $1 billion business in a couple of years. Yep. It's extraordinary. Yep.
And we live in that world where that's available to you no matter where you're going, but you have to know what's available. And one of the reasons we're such dear friends, I met you, how many years ago? 15 years ago? 20 years?
Probably close to 20.
No, 20 years ago? Oh my God, time goes by.
No, 15. The Ansari X Prize got one 15 years ago, so 15 years ago.
Yeah, 15 years ago. I can remember when we first met you, we went out to dinner one night, and we went all night long. The restaurant was closing, they want to kick us out, we're talking, because I'd never met another human being that was as driven and is hungry to know what's going on and to understand it from a practical perspective, not just ethereal. And I've watched you over these last 15, 20 years just get better and better. There's nobody I know that's harder working to bring you the understanding where the future is in a pragmatic, practical way where you can act on it than this man. And I'm partners with him in multiple businesses, but that's not why I'm saying it to you. I'm just saying it because you got to feel this man. He's just incredible. And if you haven't taken advantage of it, I really want to encourage you to do it. I'm a part of that community myself, and I encourage all people to be part of that community. But imagine being able to know the cutting edge of everything in that area for that small and not have to fly and not spend the 15 grand. I just think it's something that now anyone in the world can really take advantage of, and I hope you do.
Yeah. I hope you've teed up your questions. Just before we go to Q&A, we'll go to a quick 2-minute break where the team can sort them out and prioritize them.
Come right back.
Your mindset matters a lot. In fact, it's everything. How you think impacts what you believe is possible, what challenges you pursue, and how big you play. In this next decade, humanity is going to be encountering more opportunities and creating more wealth than we have during the entire past century. And if you're stuck in a linear and scarcity mindset, you'll miss out on the most extraordinary time ever in human history. Abundance Digital is the way I mentor and support exponential and abundance-minded entrepreneurs like you. There are 5 specific ways in which Abundance Digital can deliver you value. First, it's a vibrant and global community where you can share ideas, find co-founders, and others who share in your massively transformative purpose and your moonshots. Second, I host 4 live webinars every month, about 50 a year, inspiring webinars where you can ask questions and drive the conversation. Third, we've built an incredibly powerful app where you can share your ideas with like-minded members and get regular exponential updates directly from me. Fourth, you'll join me via live stream for all 3 days of Abundance 360, my CEO summit, as well as the SU Global Summit and Exponential Medicine. And finally, I've recorded over 100 videos teaching you all about exponential technologies. It's a Netflix model, all you can consume in a fun and understandable fashion. Subjects like autonomous cars and flying cars, exponential energy, CRISPR, longevity, quantum computing, virtual reality, and the future of 3D printing, just to name a few. If you care about the work I'm doing through the XPRIZE Foundation and Singularity University to bring about a world of abundance, then this is a way you can get involved and provide me your support. I truly hope you'll join our abundance community. Thank you. All right, we're back. Bree, what's our first question?
Great. I'll start with Greg for both of you. A basic question. What are 3 things you both must do every day?
Okay, well, can I go first? Because yeah, I know you're with me. Must every single day for me is I've got to get myself to stimulate this body to be able to do whatever it takes. I make huge demands. I mean, I burn 11,300 calories in 1 day on stage, and I do 4 days in a row. I know it sounds insane, but we've measured all. I found out chess masters burn 6,000 calories and they aren't doing anything, and I'm running around doing 16, 28 miles.
The brain is an incredible energy consumer.
Well, what they show me before I go on stage, I've already burned something, they can't even believe it, right? So it's just because I get so focused. But so what I do to make sure that that brain will work is I got to make the body work. You can't separate them. And I start every day by jumping freezing cold water. If I'm in my homes, I have 56 degree waters. If I'm home in Sun Valley, I jump in the river even when it's snowing, and I don't do it because it feels good. And I know there's never a day, never a day where I go, I can't wait to do this. But I do it as the very first thing as a discipline. It's like I teach my brain, when I say go, you go. I don't negotiate with myself. Maybe tomorrow, maybe in an hour. And to me, that's one of the most important simple disciplines that I do every day. Second thing every day is feeding the mind. I got 30 minutes that I don't read what's being sent to me. I go after something that I'm interested and passionate about. And I'd say the third thing is making sure that I acknowledge two or three people right in the beginning of the day that I love, respect, care about, because you know, I have 54 companies now and I got 2,500 employees and I got four kids and four grandkids. And unless I do that systemically, I always do it when I'm with somebody. I just want people to know it. It also puts me in that state of gratitude.
Yeah.
And then I also gear up my mind by doing something that I do each day for just 10 minutes. It's a form of meditation that I do called that I put my body in a certain state. I think of three things I'm grateful for. I kind of cleanse my system and I think of three outcomes I want to achieve. And I do that very, very quickly. Because if I don't have 10 minutes to myself, then I don't have a life. And yeah. So those are a few of them that I do every day.
Yeah, for me, it is opening up with a meditation and a gratitude focus. It is very much, you know, what are the three things I'm grateful for? You know, a focus on joy, love, and gratitude. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, what are my three major objectives for the day? Because if I have a list of an infinite number, I'll be in the gap. So if I can really prioritize it, if I do nothing other than these three things today,
yeah,
it's going to be an amazing day.
Three to thrive.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. then the next thing ultimately is my personal time. It's my reading. It's my research. You know, I spend my days, 365 days a year, looking at what's going on in the world. And very much like you, I'm on a media diet. I have zero interest in watching CNN or Fox News or any of the stuff that's coming at me.
Yeah.
My focus is on, you know, the key terms, the key research areas. I'm focused on the content that I'll use Google search terms for, or the apps that I use to bring the content to me, and like what's going on, because that's the way I keep on top of the future.
Yeah. I think it's you got to decide that you're going to become self-educated. This guy's got degrees from Harvard in medicine and rocket science. I mean, you're unbelievable. You never know it. He's so humble about what he does. But what I respect more about him than those degrees is he's never stopped learning. And in the world we live in today, that is the single most important skill. But if you're not careful, you're going to get consumed by everything coming at you. You have to become self-directed and say, this is what I want. This is what I want to know. This is what I'm going to go after today. And if you do that every day, every week, every month, every year, every decade, it stacks to a point where you have a level of knowledge and skill and insight that you never would have dreamed you have. And it's little bits at a time. It's like my teacher Jim Rohn used to say, success is not an overnight thing like we talked about,
yep.
And neither is failure.
Yep.
It's failure to say thank you. It's failure to take the time to read. It's failure to, you know, follow up. It's failure to fix things that are broken. It's all those little failures that make failure. Same thing with success. Success is all the little things. It's self-directing yourself. It's taking care of your body and your family and your relationships. I think those are critical. And if there's a magic, at least I can say, that changed my life, it's self-education. It's like that's the invisible force that gives me the power to do anything I want. And we live in a world now where I'm old enough to where I went to the library to figure that shit out. Now it's in your pocket and we're on the earth. There's no excuse. Take care of yourself.
By the way, one of the things that I love about the Abundance Digital community through our app is that community is finding all the nuggets of,
yes,
have you seen this breakthrough? Have you seen this, you know, this transformation?
And it's in real time,
And it's bringing to you, right?
Yeah.
So it's a very positive. I mean, if you go and watch what I call the Crisis News Network or the Constantly Negative News Network, I don't have a great acronym for Fox yet, but at the end of the day, it's all negative news. Their job is to deliver your eyeballs to their advertisers. We pay 10 times more attention to negative news than positive news. So how do you get the breakthroughs? Because there's a lot of amazing news out there. It just doesn't make it to you.
Yeah,
so
it's true. Yeah. We better go to another one now. You and I are so gentle in giving quick responses here. We're going to get one more person in.
Similar vein from Rupa. I know Peter doesn't watch the news, but what books are you guys reading? People are you following? Whose thoughts are you tracking right now?
I love Malcolm Gladwell. I know a lot of people pick at him, but they pick at anybody that's successful, you know? And he's got a new book out, and it's not super uplifting, but it really gives you insights into some of the issues that we're dealing with society today, which I think it's really useful. I'm also, I'm just rereading for the third time, that's how much I believe in this book, The Principles book by Ray Dalio. I just think Ray's one of my dearest friends, but I'm not reading because he's my friend. It's as good as is as great as you can get to understand what's happening in business and finance in the world. So those are the two that I'd say off the top of my head. I usually am reading four or five books at once, and you know, I go back and forth between them personally.
I'll give you one that I'm reading that I just recommended to you. It's a book
called... Oh, I'm reading it too, yes.
Yeah, it's called Lifespan.
Lifespan. I was listening to it on the plane, actually.
By Dr. David Sinclair, who's heads longevity at Harvard. It's about the information theory of aging, and David is one of our advisors for our book called Life Force. But it's an amazing book. Go out. I bought copies for all of my friends. It really gives you, again, optimism about where we're going in terms of not just slowing aging or stopping aging, the potential to reverse aging. It's extraordinary.
Also, you know, if you're really busy, that's why, I'm sure you already know, but that's why audio to me is so useful. So I was on the plane, I was just listening to his book. And what I love about it, he's reading the book, so you really hear him. And what they did nice on the audio version is the gentleman who did the writing with him, they have, after each chapter, a little discussion about, you know, kind of an update on where things are. It's just, you get a level of insight that's amazing, and you get to use what I call net time, no extra time. A lot of people tell me, I don't have time to read. Are you driving in your car? Are you on a plane?
Are you walking
out? Are you walking? Are you cleaning your house? That's the university on wheels, so to speak, that's available to you, and David's book is phenomenal, so I'm listening to it as we speak.
Lifespan by David Sinclair.
Great, next one is from Bill. I have two teenagers trying to figure out what to major in and what to focus on. What advice do you have for figuring out what you're good at?
That's a great question.
So first, it is what you're passionate about.
Now,
I mean, of course, I learned from the best.
No,
so
you
it's like,
yourself.
You know, you can make a career out of anything.
Yes.
I mean, you really can truly make a career out of anything. And the difference between success and failure is not giving up and really coming from your heart. So for me as a child, it was space, right? And then medicine and then everything else I've done. So, you know, what is your child passionate about? What do they want to be as a kid before schools or parents told them they couldn't do that?
Yeah.
I mean, anything else you want to add?
I would just say that also consider that the university, I know some people are going to go crazy when I say this, may not be the only way to do this. Some people getting practical other skills will make use for them. And I think we live in a world today where self-education is available. So people running to school and spending $200,000, $300,000, or $400,000, $500,000.
It's crazy.
Let's look at the facts. 73% of those kids that go to school and spend somewhere between $50,000 and $500,000 will never work in the field that they were focused on because they clearly didn't really know what they wanted in the first place. 54% of them that actually work in the industry that they start with hate it. They don't dislike it. The words are they hate it. So I think we have so much pressure to try to figure it out. I think it's really important to give your kids experiences. A belief is a poor substitute for an experience.
Yeah.
So what I try to do with my kids is put them in environments, let them shadow
mentorship,
some people.
Mentorship.
Yeah, so let's say there's something you're interested in. Say, great, you know, I know somebody, or you talk to somebody. You know, the world today is so connected. You know somebody who can get them to have an experience of walking around, being around that person, because a lot of things people think they want to do, I can't tell how many people I know that they were in med school and, you know, and all of a sudden they're so many years into it, it's like, I can't handle the blood, I can't handle the cancer, I can't handle all those things.
I was building a rocket company my fourth year of medical school because that's where my passion was.
Yes, and you're going to medical school. Yeah. So I'm not suggesting that university isn't a great experience. I'm just suggesting that before they put themselves and you in debt, perhaps there's a little time to see what they think they're interested in and put them in practical environments where they can test it and see what they really get fired up about, not in their head making a conception or a belief about it, but by having an experience.
Now, having said all that, if you're looking for an area where jobs are, you know, like instantly available, if you go and get a degree in computer science, machine learning, neural networks, that whole area, there is a requirement for a rapidly increasing. The other area is biotechnology, right?
Without a doubt.
Genome sequencing, you know, stem cell world, gene therapy, all these areas are exploding. So biotech and AI are two amazing opportunities ahead.
And I think it's important to pay what the child wants and what, instead of what you want, what they want. Mm-hmm. What do they have a natural tendency towards? And then reinforce that with the type of education that will get them there. And all the categories you're talking about are growing. So many kids today go to college, spend all this money, and what they got is not applicable at all. I mean, the one thing that's happened, and it's one of the reasons you and I worked on the XPRIZE together on education, is if you came 100 years ago, from 100 years ago, brought people today, cars and planes and jets and spacecraft and internets and phones in your pocket, they wouldn't recognize it. But if you took them in a classroom, It's pretty much the same thing. You traded a blackboard for a whiteboard, maybe.
I mean, the stage on the stage.
That is the greatest weakness we have. So that's why I argue for self-education. And by the way, self-education is one of the fastest growing businesses in the world right now. Forbes says by 2025, it'll be $1 billion a day. It's $336 million a day that people spend to self-educate. So, and there's so many ways to do this now, some of these university courses online. So I would just really, really encourage you, don't push them. Let them get pulled by something. And in order to get them pulled, they need to try a bunch of different things, put them in different environments, and find out where they really find some true passion.
Bree.
Great. Next one is from Mark. For both of you, if you could go back to school and get a PhD in something right now, what would you study?
Wow. So I wouldn't go back to school. I wouldn't get a PhD.
I thought I was going to say that. I'm glad you're doing two degrees.
No, but I would. seriously, because I barely use anything I learned in school. I mean, I really don't. I use the MD at the end of my name if I'm talking to another doctor. Yeah. That's about it. I would spend those 4 to 8 years mentoring with people who were doing things that I want to do. So first of all, I love entrepreneurship. I love starting companies. You and I have that in common. And I mean, so I would find somebody who had created something that I find amazing and learn from them. Right? If I can go back in time, you know, who would I want to go get mentorship from? Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, Elon, Jeff Bezos, whatever it might be. So that's it.
And if you believe the PhD matters, then the categories that he already talked about, you need one in those areas if you're going to do those things. But I would say the same thing, because I operate from the same place. It's like, I think what you really have to be able to do is say, where is the future going and what's the impact I want to have? And based on that, what do I need to get an education to have that impact with? Yeah. And I think if you're thinking in terms of where the world is going versus where the world is, you're going to be in a lot better shape. It's the old, you know, the old thing they used to ask, you know, some of the greatest players in basketball or in hockey. I think it started with Gretzky. They said to him, you know, you're not the tallest, you're not the strongest, you're not the fastest. How is it you're the best in the world? And he said, most people skate to where the puck is, and I skate to where the puck is going. And I think if you really want to be effective in anything, you got to be thinking about where the puck is going.
Yeah, and the world is accelerating. So understanding that and being comfortable with that is clearly important.
Great. Next one is from Sarah in a different direction. For both Tony and Peter, what do both of you think of smartphone addiction? How do you think it affects our population's mental health? How do we maintain a healthy relationship with technology?
That's a big passion for me because technology is starting to shape the way our brains function instead of us shaping technology. There have been studies done decades ago that people probably maybe have heard of at Harvard, where they took cats and put them in rooms while their brains were growing and being stimulated. And you know, our brains grow based on the way they're stimulated. So they put in a room with horizontal lines and another one in vertical lines, and they take them out after I don't know how many months. But the ones that were stimulated living in a room with horizontal lines couldn't see the vertical lines physically, and vice versa. And I think that's what's happening with technology. Part of it is, you know, you have a lot of technology now that is wired to basically game your nervous system. It's really, it's tapping into your dopamine, your serotonin. I mean, if I go pull up my phone right now, since I've been here, I'm sure there'll be at least 60 or 70 texts. And I'm going to screw through those, and oh, that, you know, it's like all these companies and people. And so it's a dopamine hit. So for me, it's like locking time off of that and making that tool something I use and it doesn't use me. And I think we need to talk about that more. Things like Facebook, you know, these things have become addictions for people where it absorbs all their time and energy. I have people talking about all the time, I have no time. And then I look at
how they spend their time.
Show me how you spend your time in a day. And I go, if I spend my time that way, I couldn't do one hundredth of what I do.
Yeah. The challenge is phones are just the beginning, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We're in the middle of two transitions coming up that are going to be extraordinary. And, you know, I think we need to think about this. First of all, we're going to be heading towards augmented reality goggles. And there's
if you're worried about texting your kid at the dinner table, imagine when they're in a different universe and they're not even wearing the goggles anymore. They got the contacts in there. That won't be long.
I mean, one of the investments we have through Bold Capital is a contact lens augmented reality system. You close your eyes, you can watch a movie, you open your eyes, you can see a digital overlay of the world. And there's going to be a point in which you feel naked, right? You and I both speak to large audiences, nowhere near as large as yours. But I asked them, how many people here do not have their cell phones with them? Right? And it's like nobody. I mean, I go 50,000 people. Last person who didn't have their cell phone, I said, well, you don't have one? I lost it in my Uber this morning. Right? I mean, so that's an excuse. So at the end of the day, we become dependent. It makes our world go faster. It makes us more efficient. It is addictive. So we're going to go from the cell phone in our pocket that we will look at once in a while to augmented reality goggles that, you know, give us people's names, tell us where we have to go, show us what's for sale. And then what's coming next is connecting our neocortex of our brain with the cloud, right? So Ray's prediction is the early 2030s, right? We just saw Elon Musk with Neuralink talking about being in humans next year with 2 gigabit connection speeds to the cloud. The world is changing.
And by the way, if you think that sounds insane and you're not going to do it, there's a generation that's going to grow up with it. Every generation is attached to whatever technology they have, and the next generation says there's nothing wrong with it. Put the implant in.
Yeah.
So it's going to happen whether you like it or not. The question is, how do you create the human part? How do you make sure the humanity stays in us and we don't end up living and reacting to external triggers that now won't be external, they'll be inside of us to some extent?
So these
are not an easy answer.
A lot of conversations that I have on a regular basis, the morals, the ethics, the implications thereof. And it's where we're transforming what it means to be human, or transforming society.
And the first thing that I'd say is, in your own home, in your own family, have some time, whether people, children, or anybody loves it or not, you all put that aside. You have to separate from it.
Mandatory.
I don't know if you've seen some of these documentaries where some of these college kids say that they're not going to use their phones or a computer for 10 days, and you know, most of them can't handle it. In 24 hours, they're freaking out. The few that do it, they come back and they feel different. All these stresses, they're not, their nervous system, you know, you think about it, your nervous system is put in a sympathetic mode. Sympathetic means, you know, your endorphins are going, your adrenals are going. Sympathetic is not how it sounds. Right? Parasympathetic is a more relaxed place. And when you're doing that all the time, it actually does harm to the human body. So you've got to find some space where you shut it off, enter nature, enter time with family. And if you do that, you can get the balance of stepping out of it and seeing what it feels like and then using it. Again, the idea is develop a mindset that I'm going to use technology. I'm not going to let technology use me.
Yeah, I mean, just the challenge of not picking up the phone first thing in the morning.
But once you start doing it, you'll find that you'll feel a sense of freedom.
Yeah.
Next question is from Daniel. Can you guys elaborate on your thoughts on competition? You both seem very passionate about leveraging people's natural competitive nature. Respectfully and out of sheer curiosity, why?
I'll tell you why. What does competition mean? In Latin, it means to conspire together. So how do you conspire by competing? Well, if you and I are gonna play a sport, and I'm a pretty big guy, if we're gonna play basketball, I'm gonna push you as hard as I possibly can. By doing that, you're gonna get better. I want you to push me as hard as you can. I'm gonna get better. By competing, we conspire to make each other better. And I think so many people think of competition as just pure win-lose, and they don't understand the larger game that happens that comes from it when it's done intelligently. Now, some people are abusive in anything, business, sports, economics, I understand that. But boy, we've seen so much transformation in the quality of life of human beings because of that competition. And if you look at systems around the world, communism being one of those, you hear a lot of kids today talking about socialism's the answer. They've never been in one. I'm old enough to have been there. I went to the USSR when it was still the Soviet Union and made me a capitalist. I remember people standing in line for bread around the block. And then I got on a train where everything's supposed to be equal. And I was with a group of scientists I was invited there to go on. And we had caviar in first class. I mean, your idea of socialism is because you've never been there. It's just not true. And it's our fault, though, because we haven't taught our youth to really be capitalists. They haven't taught them the idea that your life is not just about you getting something. It's about what are you here to give? And if you want to succeed, I remember I asked my original teacher, Jim Rohn. You know, we had no money for food at Thanksgiving. It's why I feed people. It's not because I'm so good. It's because I know what it feels like to hurt that way. And I was like, my forefather, it's Thanksgiving. We have no food. Somebody came and delivered some food to us as a gift, which changed my life. But I just remember asking Jim Rohn, I said, how is it all four of my fathers, you know, like they get fired, they can't be there. And he said, well, what does your natural father do? And I said, well, my first father, you know, he worked underground, you know, taking people's, you know, parking tickets. And he goes, how long did you do that for? And I said, well, I think it's been 29 years or 31 years he's done that. He goes, Tony, that's going to be replaced by a machine. This is way back then. I said, I know. And I said, I can't understand how he lives that way, but it's what he does. And he goes, well, that's why. He isn't adding enough value. He said, listen, I know, Tony, you believe every soul is equal. And I do. I mean, at a soul level, nobody's superior to anybody else. We might have different development, but not at a soul level. We're all equal. But in the marketplace, we're not. In the marketplace, it's about how do you add more value. And Jim Rohn, you say, listen, if you work at McDonald's, and I remember what hourly wage was back then, but it's not enough to survive then or is now. But anybody can learn that in an hour. It's not being disrespectful. But if you decide to work harder on yourself than anything else, if you can find a way to become, do more for others than anybody else does in your category, then you won't just make money. You just won't have a great job or a great business. You'll have a meaningful life. And it's one of the most important pieces of advice I was ever given.
On competition, let me put it simply, we do our best work when we compete. It's the Olympics, it's in business, it's finding your spouse, whatever it is. And so when we run X Prizes, we're challenging people to think differently. When it's simple and easy, you don't take risks, right? The day before something is truly a breakthrough, it's a crazy idea. If it wasn't a crazy idea the day before, it wouldn't be a breakthrough, it'd be an expected improvement. And so what forces you to take crazy ideas? Because you can take the easy way out if you don't have the pressure, but in a competition, if you know that unless you try something crazy or difficult, you're not gonna—
Or push yourself through what you don't think you can do.
So what we see in X Prizes are teams trying crazy ideas. And by the way, one of the things, one of the most beautiful lessons I had in the Ansari X Prize was one of the teams saying, listen, you know, the number one thing is if we win, the number two thing is if someone wins, right? So everyone's in there to make that improvement, whether it's opening up space or mapping the ocean floors. And so competitions allow us, give us the excuse to do our best and push ourselves to our limits.
I couldn't disagree with that. I'm in your corner 100%.
Let's take one more question.
Okay, this one's a fun one from Galen. Tony, what superpower of Peter's would you want to borrow? Peter, what superpower of Tony's would you want to borrow?
Holy cow, he has so many superpowers. Oh, that's God. Not fair. But I'd say the number one thing, I have this to some extent, but I think Peter has it even more. His way of networking, what is the latest and greatest technology, and his ability to not only have those relationships and take good care of those people that you love so much, but his ability to synthesize that quickly and deliver that in a practical way. I pride myself in that ability in a different context, but I think you're better than anybody in the world at that.
Thank you, pal. And understanding and simplifying and then being able to present that concept to somebody is what I get tremendous joy out of, right? And to inspire and guide entrepreneurs is where I get my joy of contribution. Superpower of yours are in numerous numbers, but the ability to touch people's lives in such an extraordinary, personal, meaningful way at a scale like no one else on the planet does. And thank you for being in my life and in everyone's life here. You're just a blessed soul.
I feel that way about you, brother.
Thank you.
We love each other. What can you say?
Listen, so thank you for joining us for our catch-up on the stuff that we're passionate about, the stuff that we're doing together. I hope you'll join the Abundance Digital community, but if not, we'll see you again next year on this webinar.
Take good care, everybody. God bless.
Take care.